Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You think we have tense immigration battles in this country? The Dominican Republic and Haiti, neighbors on the island of Hispaniola in the Caribbean, have had an uneasy history sharing a border for a long, long time. And there's a new chapter in that history now with a court case that actually, listen to this, revokes citizenship from those born in the Dominican Republic but to Haitian parents after 1929. That's an estimated 210,000 people. In other words, it affects generations of Haitians. Does this tension sound familiar? Does it sound maybe even more intense than what we have in this country? Joining us now is Edward Paulino, professor of history at John Jay and an organizer for Border of Lights, a group dedicated to Haitian-Dominican relations. Professor Paulino, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
And joining us from California is Roxana Alfos. She's assistant clinical professor and the associate director of the International Human Rights Law Clinic at UC Berkeley School of Law. She has represented Dominican-born Haitians in immigration cases. Professor Alfos, welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Roxana, let me start with you. You know, it's hard to wrap our minds around, if we're not familiar with the situation, so many people being stripped of their citizenship in one decision. What was this court decision exactly?
Yeah, the decision actually applies to more than 210,000. An estimated 210,000 are just the first generation Dominicans. So the decision has implications for about 500,000 people in the Dominican Republic. It was an 11-2 Supreme Court decision. This decision was to link the right of nationality of Dominican-born Haitians to the legal status of their parents. So any child or any adult whose parents cannot prove their legal residency in the Dominican Republic will be stripped of their nationality.
What's the basis of proof of that legal residency of parents?
Well, the basis of proof would be a national ID card, a Dominican cedula, which for decades has been very difficult for Dominicans of Haitian descent to obtain because of widespread discrimination and very onerous registration requirements. I think it's very important to keep in mind that Haitians have crossed into the Dominican Republic not just spontaneously, but a large segment of Haitian immigrant population initially entered the Dominican Republic in voyages organized by recruiters at the behest of Dominican business entrepreneurs who were acting in collusion with Dominican military and police officers. So from 1952 to 1986, a treaty actually existed that brought over 2,000 Haitian workers per year to work on Dominican sugar estates. And these are the individuals whose children are now being stripped of their nationality by the Dominican Constitutional Court ruling. And the ruling goes even further. It enacts a plan of implementation. And the plan is the ruling requests that the Dominican Civil Registry call the rolls of registration and creates a list of those who are defined by this court ruling as mistakenly registered as Dominicans.
And I want to clarify that in a little bit more in a minute.
Sure.
But listeners, we definitely want to take calls on this. We know we have many listeners every day with ties to the Dominican Republic and Haiti. So what are you hearing about this story from your family and friends at home, or does it even affect you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Haitian listeners, what's your reaction to this court decision on citizenship in the DR? Dominican listeners, is this the buzz in your house or in your community at all? here in the New York area, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. How do you define being Dominican, Dominicans? 212-433-9692. And before we bring Edward in, Roxana, just one other thing on the law, because when I read that this involves revoking citizenship from those born in the Dominican Republic to Haitian parents after 1929, I mean, that would include 60-year-olds, maybe, you know, 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds who were who've thought all their lives that they were Dominican citizens. Is that right? And would it also involve then their children, so grandchildren of people who may have come in 1930 and who have been growing up thinking that they're Dominican citizens, suddenly they're not?
Absolutely. This applies to maybe four generations. And that's been one of the issues with Dominican immigration policy. It makes no distinction between individuals who have lived and who were born and have lived all their lives in the Dominican Republic and have no ties to Haiti. They speak Spanish. They're culturally Dominican. And those who arrived to the Dominican Republic 2 days ago, it treats all the same in a quite brutal way.
So, Edward, I understand you were just on the island, both in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. How is it being discussed there?
Well, just got back on Sunday from Haiti and Dominican Republic because our organization, Border of Lights, beginning with last year, we go back and do community projects on both sides of the border to commemorate the victims of the 1930 massacre, Haitian massacre, and also to underscore solidarity between the two groups. And returning this weekend from Hispaniola, I think there are two questions that come to mind. The first is that the Dominican Republic is at an unprecedented crossroads. And the question is, what does it mean to be Dominican, right? The current sentencing or ruling is part of a larger, longer historical trend of a national identity that has allowed several ethnic groups to be part of the nation, like Spaniards, Arabs, Jews, Japanese, Hungarians, even English-speaking Black West Indians, all of them except for Haitians. And so the ruling underscores this contradiction of an exclusivist identity.
Why? What does the Dominican government hope to get out of this? For whom?
I think from what I've been hearing, what I heard this weekend is the mantra is to control the migration, to control this invading horde, these tropes that you hear from going back as far back as the 19th century. But for me, I think that the ruling underscores this irony that what Roxana was alluding to, that a fourth-generation Dominican can be stripped of its citizenship. And the second question is, how much of a role would the Dominican diaspora, particularly in the U.S., play in this drama's denouement?
Well, let's find out the answer in part to that question by taking some calls. Carlos in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling up.
Thank you for having me, Brian. Okay, the first point that I would like to make is the immigration was never forced. It was an agreement, and as a matter of fact, the Dominican-Haitian border is so porous that you can come in and out at will. Regarding the fact that they're going to be stripped of the citizenship for people that were born in the Dominican Republic while the law in the Dominican Republic, the Constitution allowed, that is not right. That should be upheld. But if we change the Constitution, I don't know the status of the Constitution of the Dominican Republic as of now, then from that point forward, we should abide by the law.
Well, Carlos, let me take a step back. Are you originally from the Dominican Republic?
Yes, I am.
What part?
Santo Domingo.
Do you have family there still?
Yes, most of my family lives there.
And do they feel that there's a problem with Haitian immigration?
Absolutely.
Can you characterize the problem?
Basically, here's what happens. We have, as you mentioned at the beginning of the subject, a really troublesome relationship with Haiti. We've been invaded for 22 years. We gained independence from Haiti instead of in Spain. So there's been a bit of a troublesome relationship. Now, the Haitian population has spread from all over the DR. There's not a point, not even close to the border as used to be before, limited.
And what's wrong with that?
Well, I can tell you what people perceive as wrong.
Okay.
People coming in, using resources, not speaking the same language, and basically getting the outside world, like States, Canada, France, all the developed countries in the world, portray us as enslavers. That's what people resent the most. We feel that if we hosted these immigrants and we treated as equals for the most part, they shouldn't complain that they're forced to live in DR and they've been treated discriminated at the lady that spoke before me expressed.
Yes. Carlos, thank you very much for your call. And Edward, let me turn right back to you on this, since you work on positive Haitian-Dominican relations. There seems to be this sense of, on the Haitian side, wanting to be able to stay in the Dominican Republic and be citizens. Right. And what Carlos was saying, that Haitians are saying they're forced to stay in the Dominican Republic.
Right.
And how do you square that?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Carlos represents this education in the Dominican Republic that conflates both Haitians and their descendants, right? These are Dominicans of Haitian descent. These are like Dominican Americans. And he said we have troublesome relationships. And that's a mantra that many of the local organizations this weekend on both sides working together told me, that oftentimes when you talk about Dominican-Haitian relations, it's always adversarial, right? But in fact, if you look in my research, if you look at the border, for example, mm-hmm. most of the 300-year history between Dominican Republic and Haiti on the border has been collaborative and has been of solidarity. They're married to each other. They cross the border, baptizing each other. They trade. Even the 1937 Haitian massacre, which Trujillo hoped to cleanse the border of all Haitians, he couldn't do it. A year after, the border people were back and trading. So I want my listeners to know that there is also another history that, unfortunately, they don't get enough of.
And that is a history of cooperation.
Which is much stronger than the history of adversarial relations.
Christian in Stony Brook. Christian, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Brian. I just wanted to make...
And is your background Haitian-American? Is that right?
Yes. My background is Haitian-American. I grew up my entire life in Haiti. Uh-huh. I was just born in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to say that I was very happy to hear the previous caller from Dominican descent that acknowledged the fact that Haiti did conquer the Dominican Republic, because from what I've gotten from most of my Dominican friends, they don't even know about that side of the history. And that is an unfortunate thing. And for the better part after that, they've been trying to get over it by demeaning us in certain ways. And I find it outrageous that now these, as your guest is saying, these Dominicans at this of their Dominican nationality simply because they are of Haitian descent. It's as if in the U.S. they started stripping people's nationalities because they were of X and Y descent. That is outrageous and inhumane even, because now you're separating families and you're breaking apart, you know, the fabric of that cultural group in your society. And that, to me, is just unbelievable.
Christian, thank you very much for checking in. So Roxana Alfos from UC Berkeley Law School has represented Haitians in court in this. What do you think the Dominican government is after by stripping citizenship from so many Haitians who live in the Dominican Republic? Is it to get them to leave and go back to Haiti, even if they never lived in Haiti? Or what do they see as the tangible economic or political benefits of this?
I mean, much like our immigration debate here, the way that Haitians and Dominico-Haitians and the Dominican Republic are portrayed makes little cultural, social, or even economic sense. As Edward is saying, there's a history of collaboration, there's a history of coexistence. What it does make is political sense. So we often see how Haitians and Dominico-Haitians are used it as scapegoats to explain the country's ills, poor economic performance at key political moments. I have to say that here the Constitutional Court has really moved beyond even the appetite of the current Dominican administration. So yesterday, Dominico-Haitian advocates met with the president of the Dominican Republic, and he apologized for the constitutional ruling in the name of the Dominican Republic. He expressed concern by the retroactive application of the law that is established by the ruling, and he promised to coordinate with police, army, and military forces to avoid any rights violations. So the Dominican Republic, the government, is not united behind this constitutional court ruling. And I think the constitutional court ruling brings up bigger issues of rule of law and judicial independence because the ruling is so erred in its legal reasoning.
Mm-hmm. And so, Edward Paulino, mm-hmm. I'll give you the last word here. And I'm still thinking of the first caller, Carlos, originally from the Dominican Republic, when he said the problem with the Haitian population is, as it's perceived down there, is that they're spreading so far from the Haitian border all over the country and using resources that should be going to Dominicans. And I thought, God, that's exactly what we hear in this country about the Mexicans.
Right.
How
right.
analogous do you think the situations are?
It's very similar. It's eerily similar to what's going on with the U.S.-Mexican border. But as someone who was born and raised in New York City of Dominican parents, I think the question is, you know, how will the Dominican diaspora, you know, confront this? And I think that overwhelmingly, I want to say that, you know, we understand that plight of Dominican Haitians because many of us have experienced this ourselves. I mean, I'm on the board of Northern Manhattan Coalition for Immigrant Rights, and, you know, our research says that from 1995, I think, to the present, more than 30,000 Dominicans have been deported, splitting families, just like in the Dominican Republic. So I think the question is, how will we, the diaspora here, show our political and economic influence for something that is transparently and palpably having to do with equality and justice?
Well, listeners, there's a good conversation about this breaking out on our webpage. Dominican listeners, Haitian listeners, anybody else, go join that conversation as we wrap up the on-air portion at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And I thank Edward Paulino, professor of history at John Jay and an organizer for Border of Lights, a group dedicated to Haitian-Dominican relations, and Roxana Altos, assistant clinical professor and associate director of the International Human Rights Law Clinic at UC Berkeley School of Law. She has represented Dominican-born Haitians in immigration cases there. Thank you both for joining us for this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehr on WNYC. And coming up next, we have the renowned architecture critic, Vital Ribshinsky, on what he calls a humanist's toolkit for evaluating buildings in the city. And his other recent writings, including even a tweet on the West Side motorcycle road rage incident. Vital Ribshinsky next. Stay tuned.